Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
Concepta, a leading software development firm, has identified how to work with smaller businesses to focus data analysis on a special pain point in the company, making custom solutions an affordable reality. The predictive capabilities of data science set these companies up for market dominance after the investment. Here to tell us about it is Humberto Ferreras. He's founder of Concepta, and he's also CEO, and he's going to tell us a lot. I said a lot, but he's got a really terrific company. Humberto, welcome to the program.
Hey, Don. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity for being part of the show.
Well, we appreciate you coming on board. Tell us a little bit about yourself, then a little bit about your company, and maybe in more layman terms, what you do for companies.
Absolutely. So, Humberto Ferreras, I'm the CEO and president of Concepta. We are a full-service software firm. We do mobile applications, business intelligence, and artificial intelligence and data science solutions for businesses. I was originally born in Brazil, hence the accent. I did move to the U.S. Approximately 20 years ago. Around 12 years ago, I co-founded Concepta with my partner, and it's been a great ride. We're very fortunate to have initiated this journey back around 12 years ago. Concepta, as I was mentioning, we primarily service clients through using technology. So our focus for the past several years has been empowering clients to reach market dominance through the use of data, right? And one of the main focuses that we have is developing custom solutions for clients who are heavily dependent on data, right? So we use things such as artificial intelligence and data sciences to be able to make the most sense out of the pool of data that our clients have in order for them to gain a competitive advantage in their industry, right? And I can give you some examples of that. So, for instance, we work with all kinds of clients and across multiple verticals, from sports teams to commercial cleaning companies to construction companies to, photography businesses, schools, education. And what we do is we empower them by providing clarity over data. And we do so by using, and touching on the multiple aspects of the data, right? So it goes everything from a data standpoint, from a descriptive analytics all the way up to what we call prescriptive analytics, right? And I can dive into that with you a little bit later today.
Dan, do you want to take over?
Sure. So let's see if we can simplify for my small brain all the exciting things that you're doing. Give me an example of a company and a problem that would come to you and you would work on solving.
Sure. So one problem that that we generally solve, and this applies to really any business, is to better understand their clients, right? So one example is that we work with many retail organizations as well as sports organizations to provide insight as to who their customers are, what it is that they like to purchase, what their behavior is likely to be. And we do all this to impact the business bottom lines, right? So imagine that you have a retail store and a customer walks in, right? And, you know, he's wandering around, he's browsing, and how cool or how beneficial would it be for you to know precisely what he is most likely to purchase, right? So what we do is today is we use data to benefit both our clients but also their customers. So instead of, you know, having them browse around the shelves and having them browse around, you know, wondering what they're going to buy, what we do is we provide a very personalized experience, right? And that's just one very small application of what we can do. So as soon as they walk into your virtual store, we tend to anticipate their mood. So we personalize the experience based on their most likely, on the most likely experience they wish to have, right? So let's say these people, they tend to consume sports of a specific, you know, let's say football. So we'll cater the experience based on their preferences and hobbies, right? One practical example that we of what we do is we're currently working with a Orlando City, which is an MLS team here in Orlando. That's where we're based out of. And what we're doing is we're providing Orlando City with unprecedented knowledge from about their fans, right? So instead of just saying, oh, this person purchased this, or this person likes to do this, or they enjoy this, as soon as someone walks into the stadium, right, we know their history, we know what they have historically sat, we know what kind of games they like to watch, what kind of products they like to consume. And by knowing all this, we can provide a substantially more personalized experience to those fans. You know, they'll have a better time. You know, we can suggest things for them to do. We can suggest content for them to consume from the mobile app. So as to make the experience a lot easier, right? We can, let's say, direct them to a specific place as well. So, you know, in essence, we use data to allow our clients and partners to service and gain better insight over their customers, right? Just another quick example, from a marketing standpoint, one thing that we do very often is that we apply things such as intelligent customer profiling, right, just to make it simpler. You know, as soon as, let's say you have a list of database and you have 200 customers in the database. Let's say you have 10,000 customers in the database, right? You might have a specific product that, you know, it's a new product on the shelf. And instead of just sending an email out to those 10,000 customers or to those 1,000 customers, what we can do is by using one piece of technology called predictive analytics, we can actually anticipate who or which customers would be most likely to benefit from this new product, right? So we increase the conversion rate for your business. We make the customer experience a lot more pleasant because they're not getting bombarded with a lot of things that are not really interesting to them. So again, making from a sales and marketing standpoint, one of the main benefits of what we work on is to provide an overall better experience to the customers and greater insight to our partners, right?
So let me follow that because there's a question that as I listen to you that I want to ask, but I want to just clarify something. Do you populate a profile of a potential customer based on data from other sources?
That's a great question.
If you know that I walk into a Sports Authority or I walk into Dick's Sporting Goods, what do you know about me and how do you know about me? Is it only my experience with Dick Sporting Good or is it with other data that you aggregate?
Well, that's a great question. And it's a combination of both, right? And it depends on the client and it depends on the vertical, right? So remember that most of us do have a very lengthy digital footprint once we go out browsing on the web, right? So, and generally what we do is we use the existing data. So to answer your question, the immediate and the fastest answer is we first work with existing data without augmenting in the database with outside data, right? So the first thing that we do is let's look at your data, existing, what is it that you have, and now let's analyze that data to see how we can use that against, to validate new clients, right? So the first, that's the first step. So let's say that you have, I'm walking to a store, I'm a male, I'm born in Florida, my zip code is, 328-01. So based on that information, I can look at the historical data that we have, and I can use that data to empower my business by being able to anticipate and predict what's most historically what clients with those demographics, have done in regards to as they interact with my business, right? So that's the first step, right? We do that initial predictive analytics model for that. Then the second step that we can do is what you're just describing is we can also use additional sources, national databases, to be able to gain even further insight. So now, based on this person's zip code, I can understand, let's say, where the estimated household income is. I can based maybe on some things on their social profile, in the way they write, in the way they blog, I can predict their level of education, right? Based on what they browse online, if that information is available to us, I can make an inference on what their interests are. So it's a combination of we always start at the core, at the existing database, because that's your best source of truth. And then we expand from there all the way up to, outside sources to be able to augment that data if that is applicable. Sometimes it's not applicable, and sometimes it's unnecessary as well.
So now comes the question I've been waiting to ask.
Okay.
If you look at your analytics and what you're able to predict, Do you believe it's possible that you can predict what a person is going to do when they walk inside a voting booth next November?
Well, statistically speaking, we could definitely predict having the correct outcome is a different story, but it is possible. I mean, at the end of the day, it's statistics, right? Based on what we have, so. It is possible. It's no different than the existing polls you have out there. You get as much data as you can. You run that against your existing models, and you use the advanced tools such as artificial intelligence or machine learning to try and predict as best as possible what is likely to happen. So the answer would be we can predict. The degree of accuracy in which we can predict will vary. I wouldn't be able to answer that to you right now.
But it would seem to me, and data is data. I mean, it's just that simple. If I think about, and I'm not speaking now about the political situation, I'm talking about that you have the ability, and this is what I think is an extremely operative word. You have the ability to be objective. You don't have, or do you? I don't believe you have a built-in bias. You are letting the data tell you. And what I'm saying is that part of the problem that we have today with consumer-based research, where there's interaction between the consumer and a research study, is that it's the variability of whether or not the person that you're talking to doing a research study is giving you the truth or giving you all the truth, where you use your data and your analytics across major databases, you are being objective, and you probably have a better job, do a better job of anticipating how a particular customer is going to react than somebody who's trying to do over-the-phone interviews or paper interviews, where there is an ability to gather inaccurate information. So it seems to me that from a sampling standpoint and a predictive model, is what you're doing is you're trying to predict to a customer of yours how their customer is going to behave. Am I correct?
No, I think you're absolutely correct. From the objectivity comment, the purpose that we do, that we use data is because it's factual, right? It's not going to be altered. There's no bias to it. So to that point, that's absolutely right. In fact, we are currently working with, not to diverge from where we are, but one thing that we do is this can be applied really to all facets of a business, right? Just to provide even greater context. So let's say you're talking about an HR department, for instance, right? And you want to predict who your best employees will be as soon as they join the company, or your churn rate, you know, what employees are most likely to stay over longer periods of time, or employees are most likely to perform under specific circumstances. We'll get that data and we run against the models to be able to do that. So it's absolutely right. The same thing applies to really any area of the business, including, as you said, politics, right, and voting. So generally what we do is we'll get as much data as we can gather. We'll run that data against the model, right, and using things such as artificial intelligence or machine learning, we'll try to make the inferences of what the outcome is most likely to be compared to the existing model, right? So we have, let's say, for instance, that I want to know, I get a list of 10 people, you know, 5 men, 5 women, and I put an apple, and I say, okay, so historically, women tend to pick the apple twice as often as the men do. I verify that output with my model and say, okay, so next time I have a woman coming in and walking to my door versus a man, I can assume that, you know, I apply that probability to the case at stake. Evidently, this is a very, very simple model. What we try to do is we try to isolate and use statistics and advanced computing to be able to predict things that are a lot more difficult to predict at a much larger scale, right? So I'll give you an example. So we, for about a year or so, we have been working with a client. And what we try to do is we wanted to identify who the best partners for this client would be. And we didn't have very detailed data. What we had were their social profiles, right? So we had their Instagrams, we had their Facebook, and we had their Twitter profiles. That's all we had. And this client of ours, you know, we were trying to come up with a way to say, you know, who should I invest in instead of just, you know, call everyone, just have, you know, start cold calling everyone. So we spent about 90 days working with this client to measure every single aspect that we could, right? From we measured the way those people communicated, the way they wrote, using something called natural language processing. We measured the pictures that were being posted by using something we call computer vision, right? And we also gathered as much data as we could that was out there publicly available to run models. And we were surprised to find out that there were very basic correlations between their best clients and their best consumers and people and the people that were unlikely to be good partners and good customers of theirs. So sometimes it was, let's say, you know, the amount of popularity that they have on a specific post, or the length for which they've been blogging or post online, or the frequency, right? So once we're able to create the matrix and validate it against our models, simply by the social profile of those people alone, we'll be able to predict with a high level of confidence which clients, you know, they could be investing more of their time in. So we continue to evolve that model. You know, we use that concept, and over the year, it turned out to be that we could now predict the amount of revenue that customer will likely to bring in just by their social profile alone, right? So that was a big advance. Oh. Like just by looking at someone's social profile, now we can say, okay, this person will likely be able to generate this amount of revenue for you.
You know, Dan, before we go any further, I want our audience to know about your new runaway hit book on Alzheimer's disease and how it affects teenagers. Please tell us about it.
Yeah, Don, thank you. The book is called Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? It's a book written primarily for children ages 9 to 12, but really needs to be read by the entire family. And what I try to do is I try to take the subject matter of dementia and the challenges to a different level in the form of a mystery story with my two little detectives, two little girls, Hudson and Charlotte. And it really creates a breakthrough opportunity for small children and parents and families to begin to understand the problem with dementia. See, Don, the real challenge is that the children are the forgotten people. Mom and dad spend so much time working to try and take care of mom and dad, they don't take the time to explain to the children what's going on in grandma or grandpa's brain. So you can buy it at Amazon.com, and or you can order it through your local bookstore or any online bookstore besides Amazon has it available. Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? Illustrations are spectacular. A story by Dan Perkins.
Your runaway bestseller new book.
Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? By Dan Perkins.
You know, Don, one of the things we need to do is remind people they can go to recalculating.biz and they can listen to this show and any show that we've put on the air. So go to recalculating.biz and download our videos where you can actually see and hear the subject matter that we're discussing.
Dan Perkins here for Recalculating for Small Business with your tip of the day. Should you belong to a local marketing network? One area of potential business is other small business owners through marketing networks. These groups usually meet once or twice a month for lunch and discussions. Sometimes the group will invite a guest speaker to talk about how they are building their brand. People in different businesses generally go and make up these groups. If you have a computer problem, perhaps one of the members of your group can fix your problem, or at least tell you about somebody they've used to fix their problems. Sometimes members of your group can use your product or services. So here's your Recalculating for Small Business tip of the day. Reach out and ask your fellow business friends if they belong to a marketing group. And if they do, tell them you'd like to go. Shop around and find a group or two that you like. You'll make new friends and maybe find new customers. This is Dan Perkins with your Recalculating Small Business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
So what kind of company would you think would be ideal for your service?
Today we work with companies across every single vertical. We're not a vertical-specific company. We do like to say that companies that can benefit from difficult insights into data, companies that have that gather substantial amounts of data, right? Companies that have, let's say, lots of customers, or I'd say not from a database standpoint, right? So, or customers that have, or client companies really, that have, let's say, a good number of products as well, and relationships between those two, right? So if you have anything that, let's say, if you have hundreds, it wouldn't be beneficial because a lot of those inferences can be made just by looking at it from a human standpoint. But as soon as the data becomes hard to or difficult to predict just by looking at it, that's where it comes into play to provide very accurate prediction of what can be done. One good example, sometimes, you know, could use chatbots, right? Customer service. Ways to better handle customer service. You have a lot of emails coming in. You might want to improve or expedite your customer service, right, by automating a lot of it. We also work with companies every day to do that, again, by using artificial intelligence and things such as machine learning to be able to assist that, right, to be able to scale. We worked with a company not too long ago. They were growing substantially. And they needed help. They couldn't scale quick enough. So we got together and we planned a way that we could automate their customer service so that the first layer of support could be provided in the semi-automated fashion, and that allowed them to grow a lot faster without necessarily having the marginal expenses that would accompany that kind of growth.
So how quickly do you update your data?
So that's a great question. It's updated frequently. So the model, the majority of the time, the model is self-learning, right? So what we do is we create a bridge between the data and the model, and once the model is fully validated and passed, then at that point what we do is the model will learn from itself. So we maintain and we tweak the model as we go over time, but the bridge stays connected always, right, so that it can refresh itself. And sometimes as it changes, it will learn from itself, right? So, and that is a very, very important process, which mirrors that of human education, right? What we call supervised learning. So the more that we observe something, or the more that we hear something, or the more that we look at something, the more likely we are to retain that information and to improve upon it. And through the iterative process, we're able to make better decisions. So we do the same. We take the same approach in regards to data learning.
I only have time for one more question, and I want to. I just finished a book over the newest book by Dan Brown, mystery fiction, and he talks about the. They don't call it artificial intelligence. They in the novel they call it synthetic intelligence, and the contention is that synthetic intelligence is growing so rapidly that we are going to become extinct, and we're going to be in the world's going to be run by synthetic intelligence. I'm sure in your life in this business, you've seen tremendous changes in artificial intelligence, and as you said, computer learning. Do you have any concerns about it getting out of control?
That's a very interesting question. I don't think that we should worry about that in the near future. We're still away, I'd say decades away from this being a threat, right? But like anything else, anything can be weaponized, right? And once if it's able to be weaponized, that's when we should begin to worry about it. I think that with advancements now, not just in artificial intelligence, but in quantum computing, we're likely to see these things grow at an exponential rate. So I'd say that in time, we should be concerned as these things can be weaponized. I don't think we're nearly there yet. You know, I feel confident we're still, as I said, decades away from it. As we continue to progress, though, like anything else, we should certainly watch out for it, as things evolve. So it's something that we have to watch closely, but I don't think it's a concern in the near future.
Okay. Back to Don.
Well, what more can I say? Humberto, tell us your website and how people can reach you.
Sure. My website is we're Concepta Inc. That's concepta.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm under Humberto Farias. My first name is spelled H-U-M-B-E-R.
Spell out your name. Humberto.
Yes.
Spell out your name.
It's H-U-M-B-E-R-T-O. My last name is Farias. That's F as in Frank. A-R-I-A-S. So if you want to have any questions or would like to chat more about it, I'll be happy to engage in a conversation.
It's been a very illuminating. I learned a lot. What did you think, Dan?
Well, I was apropos that I just finished that book over the weekend, and I was listening to what he was talking about in the early part, and it fit very interesting. So I think he was a great guest and scared the bejesus out of everybody, I'm sure. So,
Humberto, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate the opportunity of being here, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Marcus Lemonis, J.D. Powers, and John Scully, and 100 other presidents and experts contributed to Recalculating the Book. Why did all these people agree to contribute to the book? I'm Don Mazzella, and I'm the editorial director of Small Business Digest. And for 20 years, we have been offering small business leaders information and data to increase profits. Recalculating the Book was named the best small business book by the Independent Press Association. Whether you need help with marketing, staffing, finance, operations, technology, or many other subjects, they're all here in Recalculating the Book. They're now available at Amazon at a reduced cost. We've also created the radio program Recalculating on recalculating.biz.
Dan Perkins here for Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. People are concerned about the massive hack to computer systems that took place in over 150 nations just a few weeks ago. Were you protected? So here's the tip of the day. Close the windows and doors in your computer. If the windows and doors are locked, the bad guys can't get in. And the best way to lock the windows and doors in your computer is to turn it off when you're done for the day. If you leave the computer on 24/7, bad guys can attack you when you are asleep or away. You lock the doors and windows of your home when you leave home, don't you? So lock the doors and windows of your computer. If you have employees, make sure they turn off their computers when they leave for the day. Make sure you set your computers to automatic download for system updates. That way you will always have the most recent operating system. Just turn off the computers and you'll have a new title, the head of cybersecurity for your business. Go to recalculating.biz for more helpful tips. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
You know, Dan, leadership and management are key issues for any small business. We have a very unusual guest today, one I'm looking forward to, Janet Bridger. She's here with us, and she has a brand new book. Janet, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm real pleased to be here.
Janet, tell us a little bit about yourself personally, a little bit about your book, and then we'll go and where people can find it.
Okay, terrific. So I got interested in workplace issues as an undergraduate many, many years ago and studied different approaches and management styles, but mainly I wondered, why are so many people unhappy at work? And being young and idealistic, I thought, what can I do to change the world of work and make it a more pleasant experience? Because I believe when you have a good day at work, not only do you feel good as a leader and your group appreciates it, but you accomplish more, you're more productive, and then you bring that home with you into your family, your community, and it can really make a difference. So you can tell I have a strong sense of passion and mission about having the workplace be more empowering and more satisfying. Therefore, the first part of my career was head of human resources. And in that role, I did what I could to make benefits be more competitive and compensation be more generous and policies be more fair. Nobody likes to work at a place where they feel like that policy is more generous to this person than that person, or you're tougher on me about attendance on that person, or why did I have to wait longer for my performance review? So I did what I could to make policies be better and compensation and benefits. And I think I did, in my small way, improve those environments to the extent that I could. And when I started 15 years ago as an executive coach, I thought, well, what have I learned all these years leading people in HR and other departments and working in companies. And what I had learned is in the morning, a manager might come in all angry and fuming and venting. And what they're complaining about usually is some employee has not done what they should. But that afternoon, another employee might come in angry or even near tears, and they're essentially complaining about the same thing, and that is my manager's terrible. But the root cause of both of those is we promote people that are great at accounting or finance or science or engineering and don't give them support and training when they move into the management ranks. And if we do that, even in small businesses, if we do that, then everybody wins. And so that's what I feel so strongly about and why I wrote this book.
Well, the name of your book, again?
Zoom Leadership, Change Your Focus, Change Your Insights. And the way I came up with this model is, as I work with my leader clients, they would often get stumped with a decision. And we have to make decisions many times a day, some of them little, some of them big. And I found if I could change their focus, then they came up with a new idea. They already had great new ideas, but in that moment that any one of us is stressed, it's difficult to really access, well, can I remember what I was thinking, and can I connect that to the last thing I learned, and can I learn from my experience in the past without, you know, without necessarily exactly replicating that situation? How can I come up with a better idea? And I found that when I got my clients to change their focus, they changed their insights. So it's called Zoom Leadership, Change Your Focus, Change Your Insights. And I can give you an example from the news, if you like, that might help illustrate how this works.
Please do. Just give us one example.
So, for example, there was an incident last spring that many listeners will remember that was United Airlines. And United Airlines needed to get four crew from a Chicago airport to a Louisville airport in order to fly that plane out of Louisville. But the problem was they had already loaded all the passengers on in Chicago. So they offered some money. They offered up to $800, but they only had three takers. Now, in that sense, they were only using one lens. I'm calling that the think lens. The think lens is, ooh, got to get these people off the plane to get the crew on the plane. And they got stuck in a fixed focus, and they didn't think of other ways of thinking that through in the think lens. They just said, comply with policy, do what we're told, and then they went to the act lens, where they call the police and drag the passenger off the plane. Now, if they had zoomed in and changed their focus on the think lens, they might have come up with, well, let's pay them more, or let's call headquarters and see if we can change this. If they had zoomed out on that think lens, they might have thought, how will this look tomorrow? How will this impact our brand? And if they went to the act lens and zoomed in, they might have thought, well, maybe we could call another airline and have them take our crew or rent a car or send them by train or call Louisville and maybe there's a crew member already there. They could have zoomed in, changed their focus on that act lens or zoomed out and thought bigger picture. So the model calls for zooming in and zooming out in each of four lenses. And in that case, they could have saved them a pile of hurts if they had brought some new innovative thinking to that particular problem.
I'm going to turn it over to Dan. I'm sure you have some questions.
One of the things I was fascinated listening to what you were talking about is I've seen numerous studies that in the realm of reward for employment, once a person gets to a level of income that they can pay their traditional bills, compensation falls down the ladder of desirable things. So when you're dealing with a situation money isn't always necessarily the change agent that we have historically thought it might be, because what we are dealing with today is perhaps a type of employee who wants to, quote, be valued, to be considered important, and regardless of their position. So the psychology of the employee today is much different than it was when, say, Don and I entered into the workforce, you know, 40, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got a mix of management where you've got some people like Don and I in their 60s or 70s that are still running corporations. They're bringing in the new younger people and are having a hard time understanding what motivates the young people because it didn't motivate them. And maybe that's part of the disconnect of the communications.
Well, maybe. It's a provocative question that you raise, which is, to what extent is compensation the driving force of motivation? And do, for example, younger workforce members have less of a financial drive? Do they feel less driven by that? Or are you suggesting that at the senior level, once they're at a certain level, that money's not the motivator? And I think that... you know, you probably heard the studies that say people don't quit companies, they quit bosses. And so to me, it's a very zoomed in issue. In other words, in your job on an everyday basis, do you have some autonomy? Do you have some satisfaction? Do you have the tools that you need to do your job well? There's some famous research by the Gallup people. They talk about, do you have your the tools you need to do your job well? Do you know what's expected of you every day? And I think those do cut across generations. I agree with you. There are generational differences. Some of that has to do with compliance and kind of being cooperative and going with the flow versus being innovative and kind of challenging. So that is a big question, I think, in employment today, how to harness the innovation of the younger workforce, not have them feel too constrained, but not have them act in ways that others perceive as rude and inconsiderate. So you bring up a really good point, because there's many ways we could go with this issue of motivation, accountability, generational differences, and compensation differences.
Yeah. Do you think that the Me Too movement of women, and in some cases men, raising charges about sexual harassment in various forms of the workforce and the government, is that going to have a significant impact on the work relationship?
Well, one would certainly hope that it would raise the responsibility and the respect and the dignity among people who work together. It certainly raised the awareness of the risk of abuse of power, and I think that occurs at every – the risk appears at every level of management, because even in studies in the neurology of leadership, it shows that when you're with your boss, your brain thinks you're threatened, even if you have a nice boss, because, in fact, your livelihood is at risk when you work for somebody who has the power of paying you or not paying you or firing you. So that whole issue of risk and power and status is a problem. I think this could turn out very well as organizations insist on more respectful dialogue, on more careful and considerate interactions, and not abusing power so that somebody feels that they have to choose between their own dignity and their income.
Well, I can certainly understand what you're saying. However, we've had people on the show who are really concerned that both men and women are going to be adversely affected in the work environment, because the tension that this issue has caused, whether or not a person has ever been an abuser, that person, male or female, it will have an impact on the decisions they make and what they want to try and achieve, because
they're concerned about their reputation. They're concerned about what's going to happen. And so we've heard some people on the show who are saying that this may not necessarily be a positive thing that has happened, in the sense that it may forever change the workforce, where the open freedom exchange of ideas and relationships with people may be dramatically changed for a long time.
Well, I don't agree that abuse of power is a free and open exchange of ideas. I think that's not a free and open exchange of ideas. I do think people can overcorrect. I think pendulums swing. I think, you know, for example, if women get annoyed that a man holds the door open, all right, so the pendulum has swung too far. You know, if a man apologizes for saying you look nice today, and that's happened to me, so oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't, you know, I didn't mean anything by it. All right, that's too bad. You know, it's a little overcompensating. The pendulum is swinging. But if it gets rid of the really egregious behavior and highlights people that are for decades taking advantage of others, I think that's a move in the right direction. Will there be some fallout that scoops in people that, you know, were not really implicated? Well, hopefully then there wouldn't be enough evidence. If there's not any evidence, then I don't see the risk. If there's no evidence and they didn't do it, then it's not going to be a problem.
But if a person is falsely accused, the tendency at the moment is that if a person is accused, they're perceived. I mean, we used to have a rule of law in this country that says that you were innocent until proven guilty. And now, if an accusation comes forward, you're considered guilty before you could, in order to prove your innocent.
It depends on if the person's being, you know, accused by multiple other people, if they're being accused by the media, if they're being, quote, tried by the media. But in the actual employment arena, it's required that a lawyer investigate the situation, and usually that's somebody outside of the HR system. It's usually an outside lawyer, and very often it's a lawyer who's not their regular corporate lawyer, to ensure kind of a distance, an appropriate proprietary distance, so that the person, let's say the lawyer doing the investigating, is able to come up with or not come up with evidence. So in practice, whether it's a legal procedure, there are very clear boundaries about what needs to be done to prove that in a court. Now, I think what you're referring to is that there's some, you know, trial by media or trial by consensus. And yeah, that's a problem. But in the actual workplace environment, there are very clear guidelines on what it takes to prove a case like that.
Dan Perkins here with your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. Are you having trouble growing your business? Do you have a mentor? Sometimes running a small business can be overwhelming. You need a mentor. A business mentor can help you in many facets of your business. So here's your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. The SBA has a free program called SCORE. These individuals give of their time and share their experiences to create the next generation of small business owners who help grow the American economy. SCORE is the nation's largest network of volunteer expert business mentors. It provides free and confidential business consulting. These volunteers will work with individuals on starting a business, solving business problems, and growing a business. Visit www.score.org and you may just hit a home run. This has been your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. I'm Dan Perkins. Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your Small Business Tip of the Day. Small business funding is easier these days thanks to a new breed of lender called FinTech Lenders. These internet-based lenders cut the time between applying for funds and getting the funds to just hours instead of months. They also make it easier to repay your loans, but their costs might be a little higher for their service. The next time you need dollars for your small business, try them. You might like to change. I'm Dan Perkins for Recalculating.biz and your small business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
Yeah, I have served on some corporate boards in my younger years, and this is long before this ever came across as we've seen it today, and sat on a board, and the chairman of the board said that one of the senior executives had been accused of inappropriate behavior. He denied it, but he made the recommendation to the board that they settle out of court so that they didn't have to deal with the issue, and it was a distraction in what the organization was trying to do. And I'm wondering if we have situations across the country where there are outside lawyers who have come out and said, you may have some culpability here, you may not. You may want to save yourself a lot of time and energy and bad press by just go ahead and settling this case to get rid of it.
It's outside of my area of expertise. I don't know. I can't answer that.
Okay. All right. So what are you seeing that corporations are doing today, small businesses, that's our customer base here, what are they doing in reacting to what's going on? Does your book give small business leaders operating suggestions of what they should be doing?
Well, it does in the sense that it's generically a decision tool. So if somebody comes in and says, my manager was mean to me. So I heard an example of this recently. My manager was mean to me. Okay, so that is not sexual harassment. And now let's find out, what do you mean by mean? So using my model, you would look at each of the four lenses. You would ask, first of all, what exactly occurred in a small business, let's say, what did they ask you to do? And is that a reasonable request? And was it reasonably within your job? And were you able to do it? So you would look in the think lens, the logic lens, up real close. Then you might zoom out in the think lens and look at, all right, if we consider all of the people, if we consider the way this manager delegates generally, is it a logical way, or do they overburden some people and play favorites with other people? So that might be a way to zoom out. Then through the act lens, zooming close in, might be looking at, let's say, the specific project that was delegated, and was that something that was relevant, and was that something they could do? And zooming out, the act lens might be, did they hold a meeting? Did they have a training? Did they share enough knowledge and data? So it's a decision tool generally. Now the feel lens, the third lens, has to do with both, how do you as a manager feel about this? Are you frustrated with the employee? Are there things going on? As well as in that feel lens is the emotional intelligence components of compassion and empathy. And that's in the up-close part of the feel lens. But in the zoomed out, let's say that might be, what kind of culture do we want to have? And it's not just about sexual harassment. Let's say it's about, we don't want a harassing kind of environment generally. We want a pleasant, collegial environment, but one also that may have a sense of urgency. So that falls into that think lens, the feel lens, how we want people to feel working here, and as well, how we want our customers or our clients to feel about what we have to offer them and about our brand. So that's the third element of this decision tool. And then the last lens is witness, and that's the capacity to be mindful, to bring presence to the situation, to pay attention, and to maybe not get drawn into the juicy drama that sometimes can occur in a meeting, but rather kind of imagine yourself on the balcony looking into the meeting without being drawn in. But in a zoomed out kind of way, a small business might be looking through that witness lens and think, how can we be a good community business partner? How can we do business in a way that we think is ethical? How can we maybe enroll high school students in kind of a youth advancement or some kind of vocational improvement program? So in that sense, it's a decision tool that can be applied in many different contexts and that will provide different perspectives, which I would say, offers richer solutions that have incorporated many different points of view.
Yeah. Don, back to you, sir.
Janet, what made you decide to write the book?
Well, I kind of stumbled on the approach. So when I'm meeting, I typically meet one-on-one with leaders, and usually my clients are people who have been promoted from, let's say, director to VP or VP to COO, or sometimes they're entrepreneurs that started a business, and they might have been on their own, or they might have had two or three people, and the next thing you know, 7 years later, they turn around and they've got 100 employees and maybe never really had a deep training in leadership and delegation and strategy. So I'm working either with leaders who are entrepreneurs or with their staff under them, and I usually get brought in by the boss who's promoted someone because they know they don't have the capacity or maybe the interest to be the person's mentor themselves. So they want to be able to have someone else be that person's mentor to ensure their success when they do get promoted. So I found that as I worked with leaders and they got stumped on decisions, that if I just change the focus, very often they start in the think lens because that's where business leaders begin. They need to be logical. They need to have the facts and prove what they're thinking about. They need to have the data. And that I would start there, and just if I got closer or further from that issue, it opened something up. So I'll give you an example. I was working with an IT director who said, you know, I really can't accomplish this if I don't hire somebody, but I can't hire somebody because I don't have budget. So that was a really zoomed in on the think, on the analytical lens. So I zoomed out and I backed up. And I said, well, imagine if you could get approval. You might not, but imagine if you could get approval for that. How could you justify, what would be your cost-benefit justification of bringing that person in? So zooming out, she was able to construct a business case and a payoff and bring it to her manager. Now, I don't actually know what happened next yet because that was recent. But it's a technique that I found worked with clients when they were struggling with something or felt stuck or felt like there was no way out or felt kind of helpless, that I would meet them in whatever lens they were thinking in and then alter the how close or far they were. And then I found that if I also moved lenses, that opened up other ways of looking at it so they could kind of ask themselves what matters most here and how can I best present it.
Janet, this is one of the fastest moving guests we've had in a long time. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. The name of your book again and where people can get it and your website?
Zoom Leadership, Change Your Focus, Change Your Insights. It's available on Amazon. And my company name is Transformation Management, and the website is www.transformationmanagement.com.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Janet. It's been a real
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Well, Dan, what do you think about today's guest?
I thought they were terrific. We had great diversity. We had some really good ideas on small business and what they can do with credit and how they can save money with the gentleman from Spent. So I think there was a lot of good stuff. Again, continuing the idea that we are on the air to try and help small businesses grow their businesses and start them. And again, we had content today that dealt with both. And as in the past, if you didn't get all of this show, you can go to our website, recalculating.biz, and look at past shows and expand your education, how you can be better at what you're doing in a small business.
Agreed. Great show, Dan.
You know, Don, one of the things we need to do is remind people they can go to recalculating.biz and they can listen to this show and any show that we've put on the air. So go to recalculating.biz and download our videos where you can actually see and hear the subject matter that we're discussing.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.